The destroyer library had only the information that had been current when last it docked at Interstellar Launch, ISL, which is where the authorized list of documents was made available for download. Bean could make requests for more information, but that would require the library computer to make requisitions and use communications bandwidth that would have to be justified. It would be noticed, and then they'd wonder why this child was studying matters that could have no possible concern for him. From what he could find on board, however, it was still possible to piece together the basic situation on Earth and to reach some conclusions. During the years before the first invasion, various power blocks had jockeyed for position, using some combination of terrorism, surgical strikes, limited military operations, and economic sanctions, boycotts, and embargoes to gain the upper hand, or give firm warnings, or simply express national or ideological rage. When the buggers showed up, China had just emerged as the dominant world power, economically and militarily, having finally reunited itself as a democracy. The North Americans and Europeans played at being China's big brothers, but the economic balance had finally shifted. What Bean saw as the driving force of history, however, was the resurgent Russian Empire. Where the Chinese simply took it for granted that they were and should be the center of the universe, the Russians, led by a series of ambitious demagogues and authoritarian generals, felt that history had cheated them out of their rightful place, century after century, and it was time for that to end. So it was Russia that forced the creation of the new Warsaw Pact, bringing its effective borders back to the peak of Soviet power and beyond. For this time, Greece was its ally, and an intimidated Turkey was neutralized. Europe was on the verge of being neutralized, the Russian dream of hegemony from the Pacific to the Atlantic at last within reach. And then the Formics came and cut a swath of destruction through China that left 100 million dead. Suddenly, land-based armies seemed trivial, and questions of international competition were put on hold. But that was only superficial. In fact, the Russians used their domination of the office of the Polemarch to build up a network of officers in key places throughout the fleet. Everything was in place for a vast power play the moment the buggers were defeated, or before, if they thought it was to their advantage. Oddly, the Russians were rather open about their intentions. They always had been. They had no talent for subtlety, but they made up for it with amazing stubbornness. Negotiations for anything could take decades, and meanwhile, their penetration of the fleet was nearly total. Infantry forces loyal to the Strategos would be isolated, unable to get to the places where they were needed because there would be no ships to carry them. When the war with the buggers ended, the Russians clearly planned that within hours they would rule the fleet and therefore the world. It was their destiny. The North Americans were as complacent as ever, sure that destiny would work everything out in their favor. Only a few demagogues saw the danger. The Chinese and the Muslim world were alert to the danger, and even they were unable to make any kind of stand for fear of breaking up the alliance that made resistance to the buggers possible. The more he studied, the more Bean wished that he did not have to go to tactical school. This war would belong to Ender and his friends. And while Bean loved Ender as much as any of them, and would gladly serve with them against the buggers, the fact was that they didn't need him. It was the next war, the struggle for world domination, that fascinated him. The Russians could be stopped, if the right preparations were made. But then he had to ask himself, should they be stopped? A quick, bloody but effective coup which would bring the world under a single government? It would mean the end of war among humans, wouldn't it? And in such a climate of peace, wouldn't all nations be better off? So even as Bean developed his plan for stopping the Russians, he tried to evaluate what a worldwide Russian empire would be like. And what he concluded was that it would not last. For along with their national vigor, the Russians had also nurtured their astonishing talent for misgovernment, that sense of personal entitlement that made corruption a way of life. The institutional tradition of competence that would be essential for a successful world government was non-existent. It was in China that those institutions and values were most vigorous. But even China would be a poor substitute for a genuine world government that transcended any national interest. The wrong world government would eventually collapse under its own weight. Bean longed to be able to talk these things over with someone, with Nikolai, or even with one of the teachers. It slowed him down to have his own thoughts move around in circles. Without outside stimulation, it was hard to break free of his own assumptions. One mind can think only of its own questions. It rarely surprises itself. But he made progress, slowly, during that voyage, and then during the months of tactical school. Tactical was a blur of short voyages and detailed tours of various ships. Bean was disgusted that they seemed to concentrate entirely on older designs, which seemed pointless to him. Why train your commanders in ships they won't actually be using in battle? But the teachers treated his objection with contempt, pointing out that ships were ships in the long run, and the newest vessels had to be put into service patrolling the perimeters of the solar system. There were none to spare for training children. They were taught very little about the art of pilotry, for they were not being trained to fly the ships, only to command them in battle. They had to get a sense of how the weapons worked, how the ships moved, what could be expected of them, what their limitations were. Much of it was rote learning, but that was precisely the kind of learning Bean could do almost in his sleep, being able to recall anything that he had read or heard with any degree of attention.